What's up, y'all? This is Reverend Mikey Noschel, and welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. I want to let you know real quick, we have a retreat coming up. I will be teaching it alongside Andrew Chapman. It's a four-day silent compassion meditation retreat. It'll be on July 6th through the 9th in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, and we're calling it the Interdependence Day Weekend Retreat, and you can find out all about it at floweringlotusmeditation.org. And as always, if you want to support Wild Heart Meditation Center and this podcast, please like, subscribe, and rate wherever you are listening to help people find us. And if you would financially like to support us through donation, you could do so through Venmo, and our address is at Wild Heart Nashville, or you can visit our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org. As always, peace and love, my friends. Hope you enjoy.
For those that are new, we've been doing a series of talks on something called the three characteristics or the three marks of existence. And we talked about impermanence for a whole month. And now we're in the middle of talking about something called dukkha. And dukkha is a hard word to translate. It's a Pali Sanskrit word that means something like disjointedness, dis-ease, stress, dissatisfaction, a lot of the disses. And that's what we're here to talk about this month. Suffering. One of the Buddha's favorite topics, suffering. And I'm trying to be more concise these days. My practice has changed a lot since I had a kid a few years ago. I feel like kids really teach you to see things that you already know in new ways. And my practice has changed quite a bit into less formal meditation time, kind of more informal moments throughout the day of my relationship to this path, you know, to the Buddhist teachings, to mindfulness. And so I'm trying to be more concise, just kind of in all areas of my life, to simplify things. I don't know about y'all, but I'm a thinker. And so I thought I would just kind of sum up the Buddhist teaching on dukkha in a simple way. Buddhism goes something like this. It says, why are you unhappy? Why are you unhappy? And the Buddha says, you're unhappy because you want to be happy. And he says, if you stop wanting to be happy, then you could truly be happy regardless of whether you're happy or unhappy. It's not very simple. So he says, why are you unhappy? You're unhappy because you want to be happy. If you stop wanting to be happy, then you could be truly happy regardless of whether you're happy or unhappy. So, just curious, have any of y'all been through a season of life where you really struggled, that's just really sucked? Kind of already knew the answer to this one. And some of y'all may be there right now. You know, I know for me, I've experienced periods of depression and anxiety, and you know, we go through breakups and life changes, and you move to new cities, and you get things, and you lose things, and things change, and have you ever noticed that when you're going through these times, when things are particularly difficult, that it always seems to come with this pressure that you need to feel better? This kind of feeling that I need to figure out or fix or somehow get out of this experience. And I know for me, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, that often how this shows up is there's just kind of just this general feeling that this is not where I should be right now. This is not how things should be right now. You know, the mind can come up with all sorts of rationale. If I hadn't screwed around so much in my 20s, then I would have more financial security, or I would have a partner or a family or whatever it may be that is one of the sources of my dissatisfaction. And then fill in the blank. Maybe I just need to move or do this, meditate or go to the gym more, or fill in the blank. Maybe I just need to blank and then I'll feel like myself again. Then I'll finally get to the moment where I feel better. And then my favorite one when I'm stuck is just this general feeling of what the fuck's wrong with me? Why can't I figure it out? And I like to share about this because I'm someone that struggled with depression. Still does, still do in moments in my life. And the thing that my mind tells me when I'm in these periods is that there's something wrong with me. I've always felt this way. I'm always going to feel this way. I'm the only one that feels this way. And all of those thoughts come with this pressure that I need to feel better. I think biologically we just have a low tolerance for unhappiness. And for me, I'm not really curious about my unhappiness. I don't really have patience, compassion a lot of the time. A lot of the times I'm trying to fix and figure out what I need to do to get out of it. So when I came to the meditation hall for the first time, I was in one of these difficult moments in my life. And this was about 10 years ago or so, and it was a particularly unique, difficult moment in my life because I actually experienced a lot worse than when I came into the meditation hall. I'd been in active addiction from the time I was 14, used hard drugs, went to jail, got kicked out of 2 schools, hospitalization, you know. I'd experience a lot more. Like if I was to read you that list, you'd say, oh, that's, you know, pretty bad. If I was to read you the list of what was going on with me when I came into the Buddhist meditation hall, I don't even know if I could tell you why. And that's what made this experience of going through one of these hard moments of life particularly miserable, is that I had no reason for it. I was actually doing really well. I was sober. I had graduated school, top of my class. I was playing and pursuing music. Nashville was affordable back then. I was paying $375 a month for rent.
What year was that?
Off Nolensville Pike in the basement of a friend's house, but yeah, nonetheless. And it had probably been one of the first points in my life, if not the first, where I didn't have the luxury of being able to point to anything or anyone as the reason for my unhappiness. I was just unhappy. And in Buddhism, there's a word for this. It's called dukkha. But this realization, this kind of moment of desperation, it's called samvega, and it means spiritual urgency. We might call this an existential crisis. And the Buddha had this experience when he left home and he saw people aging and dying and sick. And he had this awareness that he had everything in his life that he had wanted, yet there was some underlying dissatisfaction. There was some sense of not really feeling fulfilled at his core. And he had this, it says, this moment of samvega, this spiritual urgency that set him on the path to the Dharma. Where he said, if only my skin and bones remain and my blood dries up, I will not give up on finding fulfillment in this life if it's the last thing I do. This resolve, this determination. And not all of the time, but you tend to find that people that end up in rooms like this, you know, did so out of necessity. You know, these days, and I'm happy for this, meditation is maybe more popular as a way to deal with stress and anxiety, but what the Buddha taught it for was dealing with something much bigger. Sure, it includes stress and anxiety, but it includes this core sense of emptiness and dissatisfaction, living life without much meaning or purpose. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, with all escape routes blocked, we're forced to find a way to bring our disquietude to an end. And this is kind of what I arrived at, is maybe there's something in this teaching, maybe there's something in meditation that could help me feel better. And a big part of what I learned in the early days of coming to the meditation center was that it was okay to be unhappy. I learned about the Buddha's teaching on the First Noble Truth. And what it felt like for me when I heard this truth of dukkha, that life inherently has this stressfulness, this dissatisfaction, this discomfort to it, what I felt when I heard that was validation. Like, there's nothing wrong with you, dude. You're unhappy? Welcome. But what we're going to do here is something different than you've maybe ever done before. We're going to sit with it. And we're going to open our hearts to it and stop all this running around and trying to just readjust your life into your next goal or your next achievement. We're going to say, that doesn't maybe work, and we're going to sit and we're going to really be present for that. Open the heart with compassion. I said, I don't know about the second part, but thanks for letting me know that nothing's wrong with me. I'll see what it's like, right? So I started meditating and started sitting down. Started practicing and being curious about this dukkha, this dissatisfaction. So I want to make a little change to the statement that I made up top. Buddhism goes something like this. Why are you unhappy? You're unhappy because you want to be happy. Instead of wanting to be happy, you could learn to be perfectly at peace in whatever moment you are in, regardless of whether that moment is pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. So really what the Buddha teaches us is to redefine what happiness is. That's actually kind of the core teaching. If you've studied Buddhism, you know that the first factor of the Eightfold Path is wise view. And it's actually the most important. And when we talk about view, we don't talk about intellectual knowledge. We don't talk about an understanding that you could learn through a textbook or through memory or through conceptually grasping at something. The view that we're trying to develop in Buddhism is a understanding that's more of a realization of where happiness comes from and where it doesn't. And the Buddha says that the problem that we have is that we don't fully realize where our happiness comes from. He has a sutta where it's called the gratification, the danger, and the escape. He says, whatever joy and happiness that there is in the world, that is the gratification that you can find in the world. But because the world is impermanent, pervaded by change, that's the danger in the world. If you remove the craving and clinging after the world, that's the escape from the world. So the Buddha in this sutta talks about two very different types of happiness. And he doesn't make a judgment on the first type, but he says there's basically what I would call an ordinary happiness, the one that we live in much of the time, and then there's maybe what he would call a spiritual happiness. Ordinary happiness is the type of happiness that comes from pleasure, That comes from getting things that we want. It comes from achieving goals that we have. It comes from validation and recognition. It comes from status. That's ordinary happiness. And the Buddha's saying there is nothing inherently wrong with goals and pleasure and status and achievement. He's just saying that all of those things are temporary. They change. And so if your happiness is staked on getting those things, then your happiness itself will always be changing. And so he says, how do we find a happiness that's beyond pleasure and goals and achievement and status? It's the second version of happiness that the Buddha teaches, is this inner happiness, which I would actually say is more like peace. This inner sense of peace that we experience regardless of the conditions we find ourselves in life. That means that we could find this type of happiness regardless of whether things are pleasurable or painful in life. Have you ever had a moment in life that really fucked you up? Like a loss, a breakup, a sudden experience of change. And you know how these moments, they are terrifying and scary, and also there's so much growth, and so there's so much joy and sorrow in those experiences, I've found. And that's my real truth. I never want them to happen. I always try to prevent them from happening. I'll do everything that I can to try to control stuff. But some of the best experiences of my life have come through the worst things that have happened to me. And so what if there's this type of happiness that doesn't require us to get things a certain way, or to have our preferences or our needs met, or to have a job or status, or to even accomplish all of the goals that we think we need to? What if there was a sense of happiness that felt more like an inner sense of peace or security that we felt no matter what was happening? In Buddhism, we call this upekkha, or equanimity. And the definition of upekkha means literally there in the middleness, in the middle of life. Pleasure, pain, gain, loss, praise, blame, it's all the same. So the Buddha discovered that our unhappiness is not dependent on external conditions. That the reason why we're unhappy is not because we get this and don't get that, or because we have this and don't have that. But that suffering, this experience of unhappiness, is something that's happening in the mind. It comes from not seeing clearly. There's a really wonderful teaching. There are a couple of these throughout the suttas that are kind of like poetry that the Buddha wrote, or maybe someone wrote and attributed to him. But I want to read it, and it's where the Buddha has this moment I was talking about earlier that was similar to the one that I described, that I think many of us have had, these moments of desperation where nothing seems to be working. And we're, as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, forced to try to find a new way to bring our disquietude to an end. So this is the Buddha's words. He says, I will tell you of how I experience samvega, spiritual urgency, desperation. Seeing people floundering like fish in small puddles, competing with one another. As I saw this, fear came into me. The world was entirely without lasting substance. All the directions were knocked out of line. Wanting a haven for myself, I saw nothing that wasn't laid claim to. Seeing nothing in the end but craving, I felt discontent. And then I saw an arrow here, so very hard to see, embedded in the heart. Overcome by this arrow, you will run in all directions. But if you simply pull it out, you won't run but you won't sink. What's the arrow in the heart that's creating our suffering? The Buddha calls this tanha and upadana, craving and clinging. Tanha means, when literally translated, it means thirst, this insatiable longing, this unsatisfied desire. And it's different than just having desires, liking things. Tanha is more of a reflex. It's more of an impulse. It's the type of reactivity that we feel when there's not much space to slow down and respond how we want to. We just respond in the same old way. Upadana is the word for clinging. And what it means is this sense of holding on to things that we're afraid will go away. And so he says what's driving our unhappiness is this reflexive impulse, this wanting and craving for things to be this way or things to be that way, or this incessant feeling of needing to control or hold on to things the way that they are. Really, what he's saying is we don't do well with change. We don't do well with realizing that we don't have control. And that maybe in the ordinary life, there are people, places, things that we can more or less control or try to get our needs met in simple, ordinary ways, but in these bigger ways, we're not really seeing clearly how to step out of the way and find more peace. So the Buddha calls tanha and upadana, craving and clinging, he calls them kalesas, which means defilement. It's a very religious sounding word, defilement. But I actually like it because what he's saying is that it is this kind of dirty lens that's obstructing our view. You ever feel like when you're reactive, in that mind state, I feel like I know that if I get what I want, I'll be happy, but that when I don't, a lot of the times, I'm actually happier. You know, it's like craving and clinging kind of obstruct our sense of being able to actually feel happy, actually be happy. We think that if I get things to be the way that I want, that I'll be happy, but it's never ending, right? It's like I get that thing and I want the next thing. Or maybe the thing that I want changes forms, and now I want a job, but I have the partner. Maybe I need to make more money so my partner likes me, right? Whatever it may be, the story in my head, it just changes from one longing to the next. And so kalesa means dirt, and it's kind of this dirt that obstructs our spacious freedom. Another word for it is nawarana, which means covering. It's a similar kind of concept. It's something that's covering up our freedom and happiness. So from a Buddhist perspective, it's not like our happiness is out there. And I would say in the ultimate perspective, our happiness already exists fully and entirely. The only thing that's preventing us from accessing it is craving and clinging that obstruct us from seeing it in the moment. Our need to control, our need to have or to react. So Ajahn Sucitto calls tanha and upadana, he calls it a desire that is never satisfied. He says, because it just shifts from one emotional need to the next, from one sense of achievement to another goal. He says it's a desire that comes from a black hole of need, however small and manageable that need may be. So in Buddhism, happiness is not about what happens, what you get or what you don't get. It's not about what you like or don't like. It's about your relationship to what you like and don't like. So it's really easy, especially most of us are maybe grew up in a Judeo-Christian worldview. It's very easy to think of, oh, the Buddha's saying, you know, don't want things. Wanting things is the problem. No, he's actually requiring more responsibility than that. He's requiring more than just giving you a list of things that are good and a list of things that are bad and saying, stay away from these and do these. He's saying, no, you have to actually look at your relationship to every single thing that you engage with to be able to understand if there's attachment to it, craving for it, or if it's a healthy sense of desire that has non-attachment, an understanding of your relationship to that thing. And I really love this, and that's why I get passionate about it, is that the Buddha is saying that I get to actually look at my relationship to the things in my life and to ask myself, is there craving and clinging to this, or does it feel like it's promoting spaciousness and freedom? And sometimes I'm a therapist when I get people in my office and they say, you know, I need to drink or use drugs or do this, but I don't know how I feel about it. And I may just ask them, does it feel like your relationship to whatever that thing is? If we don't moralize that you should or shouldn't be doing it, does it feel like your relationship is spacious? Or does it feel like it's tight, tense? And this has been really helpful for me, is just throughout the day to notice, like, what's my body doing around this experience right now? Does it feel like my body's trying to force something? Does it feel like I'm, you know, caught up in the grip? You ever know what it's like to notice what it feels like to be in the grip? Or is there space? Is there space to do something different? So the Buddha is trying to normalize this experience. And he's basically saying, through these thousands of hours, millions of hours, whatever it was that he did of meditation, I noticed that it is of the nature of the mind to crave. To crave for pleasure and to hate pain. That is the nature of the mind. Fortunately, in modern day neuroscience, they say, yeah, spot on. That's the nature of the mind. The default mode of the brain, whenever it's just chilling, I'm trying to think of something that it's like the white noise of the brain, is a mixture of anxiety and desire. Melvin Connor says, best described by the phrase, I want. Spoken with or without an object for the verb. So our chronic internal state is that the nervous system wants things to be pleasurable. It wants things to be predictable. It wants things to be clear. And when things aren't that way, this is when the craving and clinging will arise every time. Sometimes they say our brains are wired to survive, not to be happy. Right? I think I talked about this last time. And the Buddha says you can have both. So the Buddha normalizes this and he says two things about craving. One is, he says it arises. Craving arises. And what I mean by this is that oftentimes I can construct a story about myself, a judgment about the craving when it happens. What if I told you that every decision that you've made in your life that was reactive and caused consequences was just simply a result of not being mindful in that moment rather than a personal failing? You know, what if there's no person that is behind this craving mechanism in the brain? What if it's impersonal, that we want things to be pleasurable and we hate pain? We want things to be predictable and we do a lot of crazy shit and sometimes harmful and destructive shit out of those tendencies. I know I have. Now, it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility. Because if I want to promote happiness and peace in my life and in the world, I've got to practice the ability to respond instead of react, right? Responsibility. So he says it arises, it's not your fault, it's our responsibility, and he says it's repetitive. Good news and bad news about the repetitive nature of craving. The bad news is it's not going anywhere. And the good news is there are many, many, many moments to practice with it. If you were to just take one day and notice every time the mind was craving or aversive towards something, that, I would say, distilled down would be the whole of the Satipatthana, of what the Buddha is teaching of this practice. That's where the liberation comes. And you would probably notice, you know, I don't know, this mind would probably notice a couple hundred times opportunities. So what do we do in meditation? We'll talk more about practicing with it next time. But in meditation, you actually get to watch, like we did today during the meditation practice, you get to watch the wanting and not wanting arise. It just arises. It arises based on the condition of feeling. It's up there in the dependent origination. If you just focus on where it says contact, feeling, craving, clinging, between feeling and craving, clinging, there's this space. You hear an unpleasant sound, you want to leave the room. You feel an uncomfortable feeling, you want to get rid of it. We may not be even conscious of all of these moments throughout the day where unpleasantness is quickly followed by this aversive feeling of needing to get away from it. And pleasantness is quickly followed by this grasping onto it. So plenty of opportunities to practice. And knowing that craving and clinging is conditioned based on feeling, in meditation we get an opportunity to notice when these pleasant and unpleasant feelings arise. And you get to see how your mind reacts. Right? You get to sit in meditation and notice the mind's incessant desire to try to plan. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? You know, you ever feel like your mind is just waiting for something to happen? It's like wanting something and not even knowing what you want yet. I get that feeling all the time. I feel like I was born with that higher throttle of that, unfortunately. They call it ADD, but I think the Buddha was onto something. I'm like, man, I need fucking stimulation, dude. Like, don't put me in a room by myself. You know what I mean? You get out of here and go do something. Feel something. Just that feeling. That for me is craving. And it's like, oh man, again, I just gotta breathe and soften the body, feel that leaning into the next thing, feeling in the body, the urge to pick up the phone, right? All of these little moments and just taking an extra moment to breathe. And over time, we can decondition that craving and clinging response from the feeling itself. Doesn't mean unpleasant feelings go away. It just means there's less reactivity around it. And they've been able to study this too. We have a window of tolerance and we can expand it. You know, you can actually learn to teach your brain to sit with more uncomfortable shit. It's pretty cool. But the Buddha goes one more and he says, not only can you just tolerate pain, you can have compassion for it. And that's the golden ticket for me is when I find myself in one of these moments where I'm really tripping and having a hard time, I can actually today be like, oh man, I feel this. I care about this. Like, this is really hard right now, you know? I don't have to hop on Instagram and compare myself, or I don't have to like force myself through this pain to feel happy on the other side of it, because that doesn't work anyway. I can just be here for this pain that I'm in with more compassion, more patience, more grace. More forgiveness. You know, and it's life-changing. You know, I feel like these days I don't buy into the trick as much, that my happiness is always just right around the corner. You know, that's the trick that my mind plays. The if only, or the once I get. More curiosity to kind of wake up in those moments and say, all right, how is it right now? And what's needed? Do I need just some space to breathe, some compassion, some kindness, some moment to connect with a friend, you know, to talk about what I'm going through and what I'm experiencing, and then I'll get up tomorrow and I'll try it again. Hey, mind, if you want to be depressed tomorrow, that's cool. I'm going to stop giving up trying to make you be otherwise. You know, we'll just do it again tomorrow. And then everything that you experience can start to become less of an enemy, more of a friend. Some of the friends you like more than others, but the job is just to try to like them all, you know? Not like them, but be kind, patient, compassionate. So I'll read this and then we'll open it up. Next time we'll talk a little bit more about the flavors of craving. Two things. One is from Bhikkhu Bodhi. He says, the problem arises of how do we break the shackles of desire or of craving. The Buddha does not offer as a solution the method of repression, which is the attempt to drive the craving away with a mind full of fear and judgment. This approach doesn't resolve the problem, but pushes it below the surface where it continues to thrive. The tool the Buddha holds out to free the mind from craving is actually understanding, seeing it. Really letting go is not a matter of compelling yourself to give up something you inwardly cherish, but of changing your perspective on it so that it no longer binds you. When you understand the nature of desire, of craving, when you can investigate it keenly with close attention, the craving will fall away by itself without the need for struggle. And then Ajahn Chah. I've been given a quota. I can only read one Ajahn Chah quote, a Dharma talk. Ajahn Chah says, he's speaking to this experience of Samvega, the moment of desperation. He says, there are two types of suffering in life. There's the suffering that will lead to more suffering, and the suffering that leads to less. If you're unwilling to experience the second type, you will surely repeat more of the first. And so we'll open it up for comments, questions, thoughts.